Welcome back.
This is News Talk 1370 WCOA. Real news with Rick Outzen. Again, this is the end of the seventh week of this show, and thank you for listening. It is a cool fall day. Seafood Festival cranks off at 11 a.m. High school football is playing a full slate of games, and college football tomorrow. Fall is here. On Wednesday, our new Surgeon General issued some rules with DeSantis where that wanted to put who gets to decide when a child goes back to school after being exposed to COVID or having tested for COVID. And they put it all in the parents' hands, which on the surface sounds good. But think about this. For 12 years, Malcolm Thomas, superintendent of schools, told us that parents were the problem in our school system, that parents were not getting engaged, that parents weren't paying attention, that all the failing schools, that all the poor grades and all the schools were due to parenting. We had a sheriff, David Morgan, who told us the crime issue was all parent-oriented, that these kids had bad parents, and that was the reason for it. Put those Post-it notes on the board. Then put on the other side of that on the board your experiences when you go to open houses at schools, in PTA meetings, in classroom meetings. Not all those parents are sane. I mean, I have 25 years experience with my three daughters going to open houses, and there are always some nuts there. People, and just as Sheriff Morgan and Malcolm Thomas told us, there is a significant component of parents that don't show up at all. So now we're going to put the health of our children in the hands of those parents. The ones that we've been told for over a decade that we have bad parents in our schools. And now they're going to decide whether your child is going to get exposed to COVID or not. They're going to make the decision. Don't need a doctor. They can make the call. Are they? How can we on one side criticize parents and then on the other side give them all the power over the health of our schools? I think that's something that is completely lost in this argument. Somebody is wrong in this argument. Maybe Malcolm Thomas and Sheriff Morgan were wrong. That we can trust these parents who haven't helped them go to school, haven't necessarily fed them, haven't necessarily be sure that they do their homework, that now they're going to be attentive and pay attention to what's going on in their child's lives. There's got to be a middle ground. Well, I tell you what, we'll break for commercials. We're going to come back. We'll have State Rep Alex Andrade give us his update on the House committee meetings this week. News Talk 1370, WCOA, Real News with Rick Outzen. Welcome back. It is 7:11 time-wise. It is 57 degrees outside. We are in for fall. Seafood Festival's cranking up at 11. And to bring us into what's been happening this week in the Florida House, we've got State Representative Alex Andrade on the phone. Alex, thank you for coming on.
Thanks for having me, Rick. How's it going?
Fine. How are you feeling?
I still don't have COVID.
We just want to check. All right. We've had the House meetings this week. What's been happening in the committees that you've been going to?
We're a part-time legislature. We're supposed to have full-time jobs. And the first committee week, I generally call it syllabus week. Like your first week in college, you get your syllabus and then you get dismissed. I had a 3-day trial scheduled starting next week, and I meant all day hearings this week. So I participated remotely for session this week. So I didn't attend,
okay.
But this week we your first committee week, you run over, you get presentations on the implementation of bills that were passed the year before. The governor and his office start submitting their requests and proposals for the budget. And we get updates. One of the biggest updates, like in your segment previously, is the fact that we still have 16,000 unaccounted for kids, from Florida schools due to the pandemic and shutdowns last year.
Wow. The we talking about schools, Alex, the news, the governor's wants to get rid of the year-end assessments and go to progress reports, a huge shift. That teachers and parents and have wanted for a long time. What's the appetite for the legislature to go with that?
Well, I think you've seen a philosophical shift for years. People have stopped focusing on proficiency, and I think progress, especially in measuring the effectiveness of a school, is a much better metric to be looking at. The question is, how do you put that into a framework, and how does that potentially affect the Florida Education Funding Program, the FEFP, the base student allocation, and how do we kind of work through all of that in a very short period of time? It's not like these school grades came about overnight.
Right.
They happened over the course of years, and they've been tweaked and changed over time. So coming up with a brand new plan is something that I think is going to be a lot of fun, especially since my role in the House is as the whip for education policy. So, I wasn't there, but thank goodness for Zoom and for my cell phone. I've been very active this week in trying to get a hand on exactly where we're going to go this year.
Well, I think a possibility, Alex, and you will, I will keep you involved with the show because as this unfolds, you're right. As the whip, you're in the center of this storm of change, and I think widely accepted as being a great move for Florida. Of course, the devil is going to be in the details as always, but the hope I think that I'm hearing from some people in industry is that maybe we can be FCAT and FAS really emphasize math, science, and trying to, if a child was prepared for college. Well, we really need, there's been more and more talk, we've got to get the vocational side of high schools ramped up again. Is that something that you would consider making part of what we do, that we kind of go back to maybe looking at vocational education as important as the other?
Well, so putting that in K through 12, I mean, that's a great concept. But we've done a ton in VoTech, the past 2 years. We passed the most bold overhaul of our entire workforce training programs just last year. And we're starting to get updates on exactly how that's going to be implemented. And that's another example of kind of, we had bad metrics for funding for state colleges and, mm-hmm. and technical colleges. And we started, gearing those fundings and performance metrics towards actual results, towards the type of progress right. that we want to look for in K through 12 education. The short answer is yes. I think that's a great idea, and I think you're not going to find any pushback. The long answer is, how do you actually go about implementing that in K through 12 and all 67 school districts,
right.
Plus our online, Florida Virtual School, our 68th school district, to make that accessible for all students and make it achievable.
Good point. You're listening to Alex Andrade, State Representative, District 2. Alex, we've got just a minute or so before we need to move on. I got to pay some bills, but what's a summary of some of the bills that you've proposed that you've got in the works right now?
Yeah, so I filed two bills. I file a transportation bill every year. This year's version of the transportation bill is very short currently, but it'll probably grow. And it's more designed towards kind of putting a more reliable metric for funding for transportation, like public transportation projects, in the Florida Transportation Trust Fund. And then the other bill, which I'm very excited about, is a bill to allow for charitable bond agencies to come into the state of Florida and operate, in the same financial way that bail bondsmen do. Anyone can post bond for anybody else currently in Florida. But if you post that bond, most people don't realize that you won't get that bond back if the person shows up for court before the court takes, whatever debts, the accused currently owes. So if you post $500 for bond and the accused owes $300, you're only getting $200 back. So the only people protected from that kind of, taking are bail bondsmen right now. It's kind of a protectionist market.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to, expand opportunities for people who can't afford to post bond to get out of jail, to be able to prepare their potential defense so they don't have some kind of perverse incentive to plead guilty to a crime they don't believe they committed. and also allow them to go home, you know, support their families, maintain their jobs while they wait for their day in court. So I'm excited for that bill. I'm excited for the debate on that bill. For the other five, I can't wait to start announcing them in the future.
Okay. Well, it is, it, you know, it's the this part, like you said, this week was the week where everyone sort of kind of gets the lay of the land. The committee meetings will really start to heat up, and then what happens under you in education, and you're, it's going to be really interesting to watch. So if you, you know, as things happen, if you'll reach out, we'll get you back on the show, because I think that this is an opportunity to right the system. And Florida set the standard for standardized testing with Jeb Bush back in 1999, and it was adopted across the country. This is a chance for Florida to be a bellwether again, to maybe unravel that and get a system that's more progress-oriented. So I'm hopeful.
Absolutely. I think one big thing that people miss is that Florida's education system, compared to other states, we're one of the best states in the country, you know, for student performance right now. And a lot of that is due to the ideas that were started by Jeb Bush, like school choice in right. Florida. You know, people have disagreements about school choice, but parents overwhelmingly want to be empowered to make those decisions for their kids. We see that from every single waiting list that we have for school choice and voucher opportunities. I'm not saying our system is perfect. There's always room for improvement. But when the state is ranking out at, you know, fourth or fifth best in the country every single year, and then the only metric that we're, you know, lagging on is teacher pay, and we fixed that in the past 2 years, and the governor is proposing to keep that funding in the budget this year, Florida's education system is absolutely on the right track, and we're doing far better than people give it credit for. And I'm excited to go, you know, take a crack at making it even better this year.
Well, thanks, Alex. Thank you so much for coming on the show. I appreciate it.
Thanks, sir.
All right, take care. News Talk 1370 WCOA, Real News with Rick Outson. I think the system as statewide is great. Escambia County has struggled under this system because we know that we've historically had problems in our school district, and a lot of it is poverty oriented. A lot of it is generational, and there that's one of the reasons why we have the Escambia Children's Trust to help beef up the sources and the programs that we've got that will help kids get fine jobs, graduate, stay in school. The progress system could be very, very good for Escambia County. Other guests we've got on the line now, we've got Randy Jorgensen, city manager for the city of Milton. Randy, thank you for coming on the show this morning.
Nothing to it. I welcome the opportunity. Thank you for having me.
We had Ed Spears on last week, so you don't have a very high bar to go over.
Yeah, he's got a, as has been said many times, the man has got a face for radio.
As do I, so I understand.
And I'm certain there are those who would indicate I'm the same.
What's going on in Milton? What's going on in Milton this week?
Well, it's going to be a beautiful weekend. So I wanted to take a moment to just talk about our park system. We've got one of the best park systems in Northwest Florida. And we start out this evening with Bands on the Blackwater. Starts at 7 o'clock. Most people are familiar with it. Tonight, the Flavors are playing. It's a beautiful setting. It's our festival and event area in downtown Milton. There's plenty of parking available. I hope the public turns out to support the sponsors of this event, Humana, Santa Rosa Medical Center, and enjoy what promises to be just a beautiful evening. And then, you know, our park system is extensive. On the other side of the river from literally the downtown area of the city of Milton is Russell Harbor Landing. There's more than a dozen pavilions out there that people can picnic on, have dinner there, swim in the river, launch their boats. Beautiful setting, great place to spend a night. You can actually view usually a wonderful sunset each evening. And that's just the beginning of our park system. We're pouring pads right now for a disc golf course, 18 holes, near our community center. Soon people will be able to go out there that enjoy that activity and experience a new course in the area that we are sure will be successful. And near that same community center, we've got a BMX track, which is up. It's available. People that enjoy BMX can come out there with their bikes and enjoy that track. Soon we'll be surfacing the track and putting in area lighting. I think that will help those enjoy those types of activities. We've got a skateboard park near the community center that gets used extensively. If you haven't been to our skateboard park, please come out and use it. We've also got half a dozen competition tennis courts that were built half a dozen years ago. They're not used as much as I would like to see. They're totally fenced. They're lit. The courts are usually available for anyone that would like to play. If you're a tennis enthusiast, come out and use those tennis courts. I hope the public enjoys their use to a greater degree than what we see currently. And I look forward to that occurring. We've got ball fields up there, football, baseball. You can practice on those fields if you're an enthusiast in those areas. They're available to you. Carpenters Park, the council last night decided that our splash pad, Carpenters Park on Broad Street, Munson Highway in the city of Milton, splash pad will now be open for three additional weekends from noon on Fridays to 5 p.m. on Sundays. Everyone in the community has indicated how wonderful they think that investment has been. That's a great park. There's pavilions there as well. There's an elevated fishing area, a couple of boat launches. Boating enthusiasts love the river. Bass fishermen love the river. The riverfront in the city of Milton is truly a unique place, and I hope people come down and experience just what that offers.
Well, get ready for a rush because we're going to be pushing it. I mean, I think that Milton is the perfect day trip for somebody on the weekend for sure. You're right. I mean, the last few years y'all have done an amazing job with it. Your economic development has gone well. We joke about Ed, but Ed has done a really good job with that. And you're right. The park system and for someone who wants to go, maybe like to take a walk on a weekend, that would be a nice different venue for someone to go to. So, Randy, I think that our small towns I live in Gulf Breeze. Small towns make this country great, and Milton is the revitalization of Milton has been just fun to watch over the last couple of years.
There's so much opportunity, and we do have a lot going on, and that shows, that the community is an attractive place to live, to work, to recreate. Our population increase in the last decade is 10% or greater. Our growth rate is one of the highest in the state of Florida. And that's all infill. That's without right. annexation. It's an exciting time to be here. One of the things people look for is community amenities, and one of those amenities is an extensive park system.
Right. Without
a doubt.
So
we continue to invest in that system. The other thing we're investing in is sidewalks to get people from one area of the community to the other. When you talk about going out in the evenings and going for a walk, Milton offers that.
Right.
All of our thoroughfares are having that investment made. We're trying to accommodate the millennials and their family, youth that are looking for those other modes of transportation to get from one spot to another.
Well, Randy, thank you so much for coming on today. We've got a hard news break. We've got to hit to it. So I appreciate you coming on, but we're going to do this on a regular basis. I think, having you and Ed come on, I think is really helpful. We'll definitely keep pushing Milton because y'all do have things happening well.
Well, we welcome the opportunity. I want to thank you for just that, and I'll look forward to another conversation.
All right, great. Take care, Randy. Randy Jorgensen, city manager of the city of Milton. The parks are there. We're News Talk 1370 WCOA. Real news with Rick Outson. We'll break for a few commercials.
Yeah! Kick it!
Welcome back to News Talk 1370 WCOA, Real News with Rick Outson, Beastie Boys. We've got with us Cole Stevenson, part of the IB program at Pensacola High School. He has written a paper, an analysis of License to Ill, how the Beastie Boys' influential album affected mainstream music. Cole, welcome to the show.
Thank you. How are you?
I'm doing well. Why the Beastie Boys? Why focus on them for your paper?
I've been interested in the Beastie Boys since I was probably two or three. I grew up listening to them. One of my first visits to a doctor or to a dentist, he asked me if I wanted to listen to any music, and I asked him if he could play some Beastie Boys for me while he worked on my teeth.
Okay, so what was the influence of Beastie Boys that made that shift from rock to hip-hop?
So one of the things that they had was instead of using traditional hip-hop's bass lines from funk and soul, they used samples of rock and roll, which already was popular, which kind of appealed to the people who were not going to budge to another new genre. So by using the already popular music style, they sort of slowly adjusted people into hip hop.
The other thing that I think around this time is as the Beastie Boys became more popular, and of course they're part of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. They are your dad's age group, that was a big, big tape. I called my brother, who's your dad's age, and he said he's got to try to find his cassette because he wanted to go back and listen to the Beastie Boys because he wanted a podcast of this show. The DMC also worked with Aerosmith. It was another crossover. How much did that play off of all this?
Now, Run-DMC was certainly, they were huge, and I'd say their big influence on the Beastie Boys, mainly because the Beasties mentioned them hundreds of times in their book, and they cite them as one of the reasons they got into rap music in general. But Run-DMC, while they did have the song with Aerosmith, their album never went full mainstream like the Beastie Boys. The Beastie Boys spent 7 weeks number one on Billboard, mm-hmm. and they pretty much dominated for at least the next year or two.
How's it been the reaction from your classmates with your paper?
A lot of people are intrigued. Mine's I actually procrastinated this some, and I was allowed an extra month to work on it past when it was due. So that's been the main reaction, is people surprised that I got it done.
Now, you're a senior, right?
Yes, sir.
So that explains it. What do you listen to now? What do you listen to now, music-wise? What's on your playlist?
I listen to a lot of funk and soul, interestingly, but there's a lot of 80s rock and 70s rock. I enjoy all sorts of music, though, too.
Well, I tell you, I saw this. Your parents put it up on Facebook. We saw it. We thought that this would be, to us, it's someone to use music in a paper, for a history paper, I think was creative. you know, I think for us it was fun just to read it and think about, because you do a good job of history, about the production side of it. Those sides of the Beastie Boys, it was more than just the records. It was the whole the production element and their publicity. Just talk just a little bit about who the Beastie Boys were, just a little bit. I'm not going to make you read your paper, but
I mean, they were pretty much just some young adults from New York. They were just, you know, loud and entertaining characters. They'd go on shows and completely derail interviews just for fun. They were just they kind of appealed to everybody who wanted just to have fun with their life, and they just, it seems like they got famous having fun.
And their lyrics were cool. There was humor in their lyrics. It made it, you know, there was a fun element to it. It also put it, we were transitioning from the horrible disco age to the British wave, to punk rock and the alt rock. And then this came out of nowhere and made people listen. And the records, like you said, sold unbelievably well. They Grammys had to figure out how to give them a, you know, they had to get a Grammy because they were so successful, you know, and now they're in the Rock and Hall of Fame, and now they're in the PHS IB program, forever and ever memorialized by Cole Stevenson. You're just a part of this whole wave of history, Cole. How's that feel?
It's pretty cool, I guess, I think.
All right, Cole, thank you so much. Hope don't be late for school, or if you are, you got me for an excuse, so that'll be all right. All right, thank you for coming
yes,
on the
sir.
Show. All right,
thank
care.
You for having me.
Good to have you. Take care. Cole Stevenson, his paper is An Analysis of License to Ill, Beastie Boys, How their Influential Album Affected Mainstream Music. It is at PHS now. We'll see how he gets graded later. We're going to head break for commercials. We're News Talk 1370 WCOA. Real News with Rick Outzen.
Real News with Rick Outzen on Pensacola's News Talk 1370 WCOA.
Welcome back to News Talk 1370 WCOA. Real News with Rick Outzen. It is 61 degrees. 8:03, you're late for work. It's okay, because we've got the guests that you want to listen to. We've got Dr. Kim LaDuff, Chief Diversity Officer, and many other things at the University of West Florida. Kim, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Rick.
Good morning. Doesn't this make you feel good when the weather's like this?
Oh, my gosh, I love the fall. You know, I spent some time living on the East Coast, and this was always my favorite time of year. You know, if I could just get the leaves to change colors, it would
right.
be perfect.
Exactly, exactly. You're the Vice President of Academic Engagement and Student Affairs. Big, big job. You're also a Chief Diversity Officer. The
yeah.
university received an award that they've received for the last 5 years. Tell our listeners about it.
Sure. So it's the Higher Education Excellence in Diversity Award. It's from Insight into Diversity magazine, which is the only higher educational diversity magazine in the country. And so we are very proud of this award. You know, every year it's meaningful and exciting, but I think this year in particular, it meant a lot to know that our campus community felt so supported in light of most unusual times.
Well, you've done a lot of creative things. This is Kim LaDuff with the University of West Florida, Dr. Kim LaDuff, not to be confused. But Kim, some of the things that y'all have done have been out there. They've been very innovative and creative to make people and students feel welcome and not and identify bullying situations that could happen on a campus. Tell us a little bit about
exactly.
that.
And I think, you know, it's very important. There are a few things that I always try to remind our campus community and I think are very important. Number one, you know, this has to come from the top. And so I want to credit our president, Dr. Martha Saunders, for always being supportive. This is a priority on our campus. When I first came on board, we adopted a slogan, awareness, acceptance, respect. And our students say it's not just a motto, it's a way of life on our campus. And you'll see those signs, you know, when you walk through the commons, when you walk through various offices. And, you know, in terms of programming, I think we do our best to be proactive, but we also do our best to be responsive. When we know that students may be facing certain situations, we want to be sure that we create an opportunity for them to, you know, have a discussion, for that to provide them with tools that will help them when they have these interactions in the classroom. I mean, the reality is higher education, you know, and universities are a place where we challenge thought, we challenge belief, we encourage people to realize that there's room for all kinds of thought. And so we want to make sure that our students are prepared to have those cross-cultural conversations.
Well, the University of West Florida and the Black community here used to, UWF used to stand for University for White Folks. And that has changed significantly over the last two decades. And I think that the diversity in faculty, I think, is significant now. And I think that makes a difference, as well as the student body. You're keeping more local students wanting to go to UWF.
We are. I mean, it's a great place to be. We have really strong programs. And I think one of the things that has been particularly attractive is we, you know, my academic engagement is truly about not just recruiting students, but providing the support services they need to be successful. And so one of the things that we've done is we have looked at those segments of the population that may have struggled a little bit. And we have interventions and we have programming that will help them find community, because it's not just about the academic side. It's about the whole student. Mm-hmm. And so you want to make sure that they're really getting engaged, meeting people, that they know where to go for help. We want the most challenging thing to be their coursework, not adapting to, you know, the campus community. And so we have our TRIO Student Support Services, which we have a federal grant that we just renewed yet again. And that's a wonderful program for students who are first generation, who face, you know, financial difficulties and who self-identify as disabled. We have Take Stock Collegiate Scholars, which these are kids who were part of the Take Stock in Children program in Florida, and we support them all the way through college. We were actually the first university to create that program, so we sort of created a model for the other SUS institutions. So it's been very exciting.
The voice you're listening to is Dr. Kim LaDuff. She is UWF Vice President for Academic Engagement and Student Affairs. What programs do you have this semester to highlight diversity on campus?
Well, sure. Well, happy Hispanic Heritage Month. That's actually this month. And so one of the activities that we've been doing quite successfully is campus conversations. And so what we do is around noon, once a month, we will invite faculty who have research interests or special interests in current events that are related to diversity, and we'll invite them to have a conversation with our students and, you know, really give them, again, that opportunity to come together and talk about the issues of the day. We also, one of the things that I'm very proud of, we partner with community organizations and with other departments on campus to hold lectures, performances, different things, you know, that we can invite the community to so that they can take part in that conversation as well. So we'll have some of those campus conversations and some events that we'll be announcing very soon where we're partnering with some of those organizations.
Now, Kim, you came to UWF from Southern Mississippi. Southern is playing Alabama this weekend. What's your prediction?
Yes.
What's your prediction?
Well, you know, I always root for the underdog. I'm going to pull for Southern Miss, but.
Good. Do it. Yeah. Well, I mean, with Brett Favre there, he beat both Auburn and Alabama.
True.
Y'all were the best team. Y'all were the best team in Alabama that year.
That's right. You know, it ebbs and flows, but what can you say? So.
Great. Kim, thank you so much for coming on the show, and thank you for what you do for the university and for the community.
Thank you, Rick. I truly appreciate you having me this morning.
All
have
right.
A great day.
You too. Take care.
Bye-bye.
We're News Talk 1370 WCOA, Real News with Rick Outzen. When we come back, we're going to talk about Mana Food Bank. Welcome back. It is Real News, and I'm Rick Outzen. Thank you for listening to the show. We're in the home stretch. Yesterday, we got a press release that really just talks about what we do in this community to help people. Mana Food Bank is expanding a program that it's had for a while into Santa Rosa County. And to help us understand it, we've got Dee Dee Flaunlacher on the phone. Dee Dee, thank you for doing the show.
Good morning, Rick. Thank you so much for having us.
Oh, always. You know, I've always been a big supporter of Mana. Y'all do God's work every day. And
thank you.
Tell us about the School Resource Officer Fund program, food program, and how you're expanding it into Santa Rosa.
Absolutely. So we've had this program since 2018. It's a great program. In fact, it's probably one of our more unique partnerships. Started out with the Pensacola Police Department when we found out that school resource officers were having to come out of pocket to buy food to have in their offices because they had kids who would come in who were hungry or they were hangry. So, you know, they would get in trouble. And part of the problem was the child was hungry. And so since 2018, we have provided what we call ready-to-eat, grab-and-go food items, snacky kind of things for school resource officers to have, initially with Pensacola Police Department. Then we expanded to Escambia County Sheriff's Office. And then this year, we're so excited to be now partnering with the Santa Rosa County Sheriff's Office as well. So altogether, over 30 schools that are touched by this very unique program called School Resource Officer Program.
You know, we're listening to Dee Dee Flaunlacher. She is the executive director of Mana Food Pantry. Our food, child hunger is a big issue in Escambia and Santa Rosa counties. Tell our listeners some of the statistics. I think they'll upset them.
Yeah, you know, it's really amazing, Rick, that one in five children are facing food insecurity, and that was actually in 2019, and that was improved. Now it's one in three. So just imagine one in three children who don't have access to healthy food, who may go hungry tonight, and that's right here in our community in Escambia and Santa Rosa counties. It's hard to believe. It's hard to imagine. But it happens, unfortunately, and happens for a lot of different reasons. And so we've really tried to focus on getting healthy food out to kids in need and their families. And it's really been a challenge. It's really hard, you know, when a child is hungry, they can't learn. They, you know, they're focused on their tummies growling instead of what the teacher is saying.
Well, and we know that the cafeterias do a yeoman's job in the schools,
yes,
feeding the kids, but some kids, really not their fault. The parents don't get them in school in time enough, or something happens and they're late and they miss the cafeteria. And this is I've talked to teachers. This has been one of the issues, is, and teachers have been doing the same thing, is that I've got kids that are coming in late. I've got to get something in their stomach or they're not going to pay attention. And so this child hunger is a huge issue.
It really is. And, you know, what's really great about the School Resource Officer Program, Rick, is what happens is that it gives the law enforcement officer the opportunity to build a relationship with that child. So when the child comes into their office and says, I'm hungry, or the child gets in trouble and the school resource officer realizes that part of the problem is that they, you know, they're hungry, then it begins a relationship that is unique between that child and that law enforcement officer. And then they can begin building that relationship. It opens the door to conversations about academic performance and behavior, life at home, and so much more. And so the other part that I love about this program is if a school resource officer, just imagine this, a school resource officer has to go to a person's home to check on that child. The knock on the door, there they are, a law enforcement officer in their uniform, and the person opens the door, the parent, the grandparent, whoever it is, and that can be intimidating.
Right.
Nothing to do with the school resource officer, it just can be intimidating. And they find out that one of the problems that's going on is the child doesn't have food, nor does the family. Well, we provide food bags for that school resource officer. So then the school resource officer goes back an hour later or the next day and they knock on the door. They still got the same uniform on, it's still the same person, but now they have bags of healthy
right.
food. And that develops a relationship with the family as well. So it's a great program.
Well, I'm glad you're expanding it into Santa Rosa County. Dee Dee, if someone wanted to get involved with Mana or donate to your to your efforts, how can they get in touch with you?
Absolutely. So they can give us a call here at 850-432-2053. But really the best way is go to our website at mannahelps.org, and you can learn about volunteering as well as how to get involved in other ways like food drives and making donations. And Rick, we still appreciate you and everything you do for the community and having us on this morning.
Well, great. Didi, we'll do this again. Thank you so much for coming on this morning.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
All right. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye. I've mentioned it several times, Seafood Festival, they're warming up 11 o'clock. The kitchens will be open. The food will be ready. Crafts will be ready to be sold. Other thing happened this weekend, and the other program, the other group that I like to support is the West Florida Public Libraries. This is their annual fall book sale, their big fall book sale. It's down at the downtown library. Today, from 3 to 7, this is their Friends Advance Sale. For $5, you get to look at the books before everyone else does. At this downtown library, it is 239 North Spring Street. The regular sale opens up tomorrow through Saturday, but today's the advance sale. So support the public library. Libraries are critical. Not everyone has Kindles. Not everyone has computers that they can read their books on. They still need that. And I know a lot of people that still like to get hard copies. Other way, they also have books on tape. They have a whole lot of other services. And this, Friends of the West Florida Library System, this is how they help. So if you get a chance, but maybe after you go to the Seafood Festival or before you go to the Seafood Festival, drop by the downtown library, buy a couple of books. It'll help. It'll go for a very, very good charge, a good system out there to help them significantly. So it is one of those weekends that there's a lot going on in town. Clue is still playing at the Pensacola Little Theater. I think this is their last week. Tickets are inexpensive. It is a fun play. It's one that you can also enjoy. Eat dinner at the Seafood Festival. Go over to the Little Theater and watch them. We've got all this calendar events out there on the web, inweekly.net. Check it out. We're going to go ahead and break for the end of the show. Golly, it's gone by so fast. We'll start it all over again next week. It's 7:02 on Monday. Thank you for listening this week. Have a great weekend.